Tony, if I may call you so, you don't mind, do you?
No. Well, I wanted to tell you in the first place that I have never been more inspired than I was by your own story, your dedication to this great cause, and just as my spirits were uplifted by the thing, by the man you are and the things you do, I admired so much the way in which you said things and the philosophy that gave rise to those thoughts, that I think I can do no better to fortify myself for the tasks before me than to have some of your words and your story as the background for things which I may be able to say. And I can assure you I can find no better way to say them than by echoing the manner in which you say them. Now, what I would like you to do, if you would, at the outset, is to tell very briefly, and I'm sure, knowing the man you are, it'll be modestly, the story of your own connection with this. I would like to hear how you was educated yourself, how, with your wide right reading of English literature, you equipped yourself for your task, how you began life as a road maker, I believe, in these parts, and how you have become, or will become, if you have not already become, a famous journalist and have done such fine work in amongst the people whom you are serving so brilliantly. If you will tell me a little bit about that, and then I would like you to tell me particularly the story of this camp. I would like to know of the teaching of handicrafts, which I saw today with such admiration. And not least, I would like to you to tell me about the contributions that the refugees themselves have made to the amenities of their life and the betterment of their own conditions. I was particularly struck by their contribution in money. I was particularly struck by the signs they put up, and by the many other things they've done to make life pleasanter for themselves and their companions. I would also you to like say something about the sadness of their exile and how perhaps their own philosophy is developing gradually by helping themselves and each other to bear that exile with a little more equanimity.
Thank you, sir. It was most flattering. I wish I would live up to your expectations. My name is Antranik Bekarjian, and I'm an Armenian. I was born in Jerusalem, and in the Palestine days, I was a government official. I saw most of the tough fighting of Jerusalem in and around the holy places, at a time when perhaps there were only 7,000 people left of a city which had 150,000. For 2 years following the conflict, I was jobless. I was forced to begin work again, and my beginnings after the conflict were as a laborer with the distribution of basic foods to refugees. Today I am in charge of almost 100,000 refugees in this Jericho area, out of a total of 630,000 refugees who live in the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. Refugees in the Jericho area are very much conglomerated. Almost 82,000 refugees out of the 100,000 who live in the Jericho area are living in four major camps, one of which is the Aqaba Jaber camp, which you had the opportunity to visit briefly today. The refugees in the Jericho area came towards the latter part of 1948, and they selected this site because the shelter was not a problem for them, and water was available in abundance. Jericho, all throughout history, had been an oasis right in the middle of the Jordan Valley, a very green patch of a place. In the Palestine days, it was a good winter resort, and there were only 4,000 or 5,000 people who lived in it. Suddenly, the population swelled up to 100,000, and all these refugees clustered all around the little green oasis of beautiful Jericho. It is most strange that most of the camps around Jericho area are so closely associated with past history. On the western side of Jericho is the Mount of Temptation. Right at the foot of the hill of the Mount of Temptation is the Spring of Elijah. Besides the Spring of Elijah, There are the old Jericho digs where the earliest traces of an organized agricultural society had been discovered. Just besides this old site, there now exists one of our camps, and people are still drawing their water from the famous spring of Elijah. We should recall that the spring of Elijah was a salty spring, and the prophet of Elijah turned it into sweet water by throwing a little bit of salt into it. At least that is what the Bible story says to us. The refugees in the Jericho area, after having lived for almost 10 years, kind of life which is full of hardship, have recently, and very fortunately, been undergoing through a great and very significant psychological change of attitude. They now realize that they should, as long as they stay here and until their political solution is resolved, to do more to help themselves and particularly their young generation. Recently, they have started believing in the necessity of creating public parks, for example, for themselves in every camp. From the very little they have contributed modestly towards such schemes. They believe that it is their duty to recreate in these arid areas to which they have come to live, green places, perhaps small paradises like they left behind in Palestine. After all, they argue, this is our land and it shall remain our land, and we ought to contribute towards this construction. They've also planted trees quite considerably along the roads in the camps and in their own compounds. They have felt that there is great need for the construction of roads. They have suffered enough, they realized, from the dust that has given them a lot of eye diseases in the past. So they have, in one particular case, in the camp of Aqaba, which you visited today, contributed a sum of almost 450 sterling pounds from the very little income they possess towards the construction of a road, and this money has been added to whatever the United Nations Relief and Works Agency has been able to set aside from its meager funds for the construction of an extension of a road in the camp. The remaining three other camps in the area have followed this good example, and in one other camp, which is far smaller than Aqaba, refugees have contributed 200 pounds, and in one other camp, namely En Sultan, which is near the spring of Elijah, they are in the process of collecting another 100 sterling pounds for this purpose. Of great significance also has been the fact that our growing young generation in the schools, particularly in the course of this scholastic year, have adopted a great number of extracurricular activities. They have sponsored the activities on the principle that they are required for the school. They are projects that, unfortunately, UNLA, though it realizes are necessary, does not unfortunately have the means to carry out. And again, students and teachers and other donors from amongst the refugees have come together and have pooled money and have pooled effort and have worked extra hours beyond their call of duty in order to bring about successfully such good projects.
Tell them about the road, the lovely road signs.
In the Aqaba camp, which you visited today also, we have had a problem. As you notice, Aqaba camp is right on the road that leads to Jericho from Jerusalem. The camp refugees have suffered tremendously because of road accidents. Tolls had been in the region of 20 per year from the camp inhabitants. Driven by the urge to reduce camp road accidents of camp population, they've also bought sheet metal. They've also worked the sheet metal into road signs. They have found amongst our students people who could write, and they have erected road signs all along the road which say, please reduce your speed, please be cautious, you are approaching a populated area, this is a refugee camp. Another significant aspect which I find in the way of a psychological change amongst the refugees has been the amount of understanding of our UNRWA problems, particularly on the part of the refugee leaders, and even down the line on the part of the individual refugees. They have now come to realize that UNRWA is a humanitarian organization, and believe me, it has taken us some time to be able to get across this point of view to them. They realize that free world, and particularly the Western world, contributes very magnanimously and very generously towards their humanitarian cause. They have learned, for example, that the political issues are separate from the humanitarian work that UNRWA does. And while appreciating tremendously the assistance we get, they're also appreciative of the fact that we have a very small budget, and that within that small budget, UNRWA is trying to do its maximum in the way of assisting them. They have, of course, appreciated that there is so much more that they need in their everyday life, and the new spirit has developed amongst the refugees, whereby they have argued in the following manner. They say, for years we have been asking UNRWA and the government in some cases to give us this or that in the way of services we needed, and we have failed to be able to achieve any of our requests, because the simple reason is that both organizations do not have money to be able to give us what we need. Therefore, they have sat down together, their elders particularly, or their mukhtars, as they are called sometimes, and they have said, let us see what we can do of these things we need for ourselves, by our self-reliance, by putting our efforts together. And believe me, a lot has been done. A lot has been done. Much more than people can believe is being done. In their urge to, in this life of, let's say, desperation, which they are trying to make cheerful by all possible ways, they are greatly, greatly led by the spirit of piousness which exists amongst the camp refugees in particular. More than 95% of our refugees in camps are Muslims, and Muslims are very religious people. They have stuck to their religion very piously, and they have refused to be the prey of any subversive propaganda. They have rejected communism as an atheist mode of life, and in spite of their hardships, they have remained, and I hope shall continue to remain, staunch anti-communists. In spite of the fact, as I said, and pardon my repeating again, of the tremendous hardships to which they have been subjected, and in spite of the fact that the kind of life that they have been leading is perhaps the most fertile breeding ground for subversive thoughts.
Now, will you tell us something about their handicrafts, about the beautiful show of dolls I saw? Will you tell them something about their games and the little shops they have down the street and things of that sort?
Earlier in this conversation, I think I mentioned the fact that our schools, led by the parents of our students, have developed this idea of extracurricular projects, things that the schools need, which we cannot give them. Small contributions have been made by the students and by the teachers, and as a result of these things, they have developed several extracurricular activities. For example, one of our girls' schools has developed, I think, a good infant health care demonstration center. They have provided everything that they need to teach the growing girls how to become good mothers. Another school, for example, in the Aqaba camp, has put on show a simple, clean, good sanitary room furnishings for a refugee in a camp. Everything in that room is neat, and everything is made of cheap materials, which no matter how poor a refugee could be, he could very easily obtain in a camp. Many people, many refugees, have seen this demonstration room, and I should mention that we have a similar room on show in every one of our camps, and from the very simple lessons they have learned from these exhibitions, they have done a lot to improve their lot in their own dwellings. Another room, for example, another school, for example, has, in order to carry on the tradition of the Arabs amongst the growing generation has collected a series of national woman dresses. They have taught the girls in the school how to cut the dresses, how to dress the dolls, how to embroider the special patterns of embroidery that are common in the various native dresses which exist around this part of the world. Some of our boys' schools have developed and founded for themselves agricultural demonstration centers. It would be recalled that the Palestinians are essentially an agricultural people, and the Jordan Valley is also an essentially agricultural people place. And although, for example, our school curriculum does not enable us to really give agricultural education, prompted and driven by the desire to carry on this very vital occupation, one of our schools has established a very good agricultural demonstration center. They have on exhibit in this place various of the products and the vegetables that can grow, examples of the various plant diseases and the insects and the worms that cause them, various insecticides that are used in order to combat such plant diseases. They have even purchased a small microscope for themselves.
Tell us a little bit about the, just mentioned the number of dolls, of various dresses that were put on, and the beautiful dresses I saw. And I would also like to refer to the growing of flowers and mention the frangipani that I was given and the ponciana trees and the jacarandas and all these.
Yes. The national native dresses that were on show today in our small exhibition, I think were around 22 in number. They do not naturally represent all the national dresses that exist in Jordan, but this is a modest beginning, and I hope that next year we shall complete the whole series. Some of our schools, I forgot to mention earlier, have also adopted horticulture as an extracurricular activity. We believe that our girls must be taught how to beautify their homes, and flowers are a good media for beautification of our domiciles. So one of our girls' schools grew a lot of plants and flowers in the course of the scholastic year, and they had exhibited to them in a small model garden which was specially constructed for the purpose. Of the flowers that were exhibited in this small room, there were the frangipanis, with the beautiful smell of which you were given a bouquet. There were, of course, many varieties of cactus plants. There were many varieties of indoor plants. There were several varieties of the bougainville plant that grows abundantly in Jericho. More so, we have also established in each camp a small nursery where we grow our own seedlings, and in the winter of each year we distribute it to the camp refugees. We have made a special effort of planting trees, and the best tree that grows in this part of the world, in Jericho particularly, is the ponciana and the jacaranda trees. And as I think all our main roads have been planted with both of these trees, which in future are going to give us the beautiful red bloom of the ponciana and the beautiful blue flowers of the jacaranda tree. I wish to elaborate slightly over the statement made earlier that refugees in Palestine were mainly occupied in agricultural work and were deriving their land out of their incomes and their livelihoods out of the land. In this connection, I think it is significant to point out, and this has been mentioned by Mr. Isaac Don Peretz in his book Israel and the Palestine Arabs, that more than half of the total citrus products of Israel in their first 5 years of existence came from totally abandoned Arab orange groves. Refugees, unfortunately, following the years of the Palestine conflict, could not immediately occupy themselves with agriculture for a variety of reasons. In the first place, it was their belief and thinking that they were going to go back in a matter of months after 1948 back to their homes and houses. Subsequently, when the problem was not resolved and refugees had to find work, those who were skilled in agriculture could not find land in order to till it and work on it. Wherever they found land, they produced something really praiseworthy. In the Karame camp, for example, which is on the eastern side of the Jordan River and which falls within the administrative area of Jericho, refugees occupied a piece of land that was good for nothing. They worked on it for years and they were able to demonstrate to the people that the land was good, that with proper toil, that with proper care, it can produce a lot. As a result, prices of land around the camp have soared up tremendously. Now the whole surrounding of the camp has been purchased and is utilized by private groves. It has been also unfortunate that the young generation have not been able to take from their fathers the arts of agriculture, because most of our refugees live in camps, and in camps where there is congestion of refugees, land and water are major problems. So the means of demonstration, the means of passing over this knowledge, perhaps which comes to the Palestine refugee through heritage, has not been possible to give. UNRWA particularly, in order to fill this gap, has tried to interest refugees, and particularly their children, in the use of their hands. Therefore, we have started a program of handicraft education, whereby children in our schools, as of the fifth grade, sixth grade, the seventh grade, the eighth grade, have now been given 6 periods a week in handicraft knowledge, 2 in metalworks and 2 in woodworks and 2 in drawing. As a result of this kind of knowledge which children receive in their schools, young refugee kids have really earned a lot and have been able to produce a lot, and a lot of what they produce today, of course, you saw in the exhibition which we were about to inaugurate. There are almost 3,000 births amongst refugees every year in this particular area. More than half of the refugees are adults. 3 out of every 5 amongst the refugees has become an adult while he was a refugee, perhaps while he was living in a camp under the grim and hardships circumstances to which he was subjected. In spite of these situations, however, I should say that refugees are growing with the hope of a better future. For them, the better future means a better education, which will enable them to find a decent means of livelihood. A better future also means the realization of their never dying hope that one day the world will give them justice, that one day the cause of the refugee will never go without due consideration, at least by the free world and the freedom loving nations. Another significant thing in the life of a refugee, I think, is his attitude to take whatever trouble faces him, whatever difficult circumstances come across his way, with a smile. And I think to treat particularly every guest with the hospitality that has been part and parcel of the history of the Arab. You saw, sir, today that in the most humble of rooms which you visited, a man whose circumstances, I think, could not have been worse in any place in the world, greeted you with a smile, sat down with you cheerfully, did not speak about his troubles, and he insisted that you should honor him by receiving some of his hospitality, no matter how modest that could have been. I think it's an insult for us people if a guest comes to our home and we do not treat him with the hospitality and the smile that is a must in each case. And we are only sorry that sometimes we cannot treat our guests as royally as we have treated them all throughout history, and as royally as we really sincerely wish to do in the case of any visitor, even though he may be an enemy. Another one of the problems that face us, particularly these days, is the problem of idle youth in camps. You may have heard it said that around the area of UNRWA operations in the Middle East, we have some 30,000 young men who are going out of our schools each year in order to find work and enter the battle of life. Most of these people cannot find work. Therefore, they are idle. They are frustrated. Amongst them perhaps exist the future leaders, the genius, says, talented persons who could have become perhaps of world significance if ample opportunities were given them. The problem is what could be done for these people. Of course, UNRWA, through the assistance of the free world, is embarking on an expansion of our vocational training program. We hope to be able to graduate perhaps 2,500 such young men yearly from our vocational training centers. But then even that is scratching the surface of the problem, and the mass of the refugee youth remain idle in camps. These youth do not like idleness. They like to occupy themselves in some beneficial manner. They have come together. They have taken advantage of the youth activities program that UNRWA has modestly put forward to them. They have organized themselves into clubs. They have formed themselves into committees. They take care of all the functions of such centers. They have built basketballs. They have built footballs with their own hands. And they spend most of their free time in such helpful and beneficial activities that are so vital in their lives.